Hello, this is Ruslan Malinovsky.
Hello, this is Roman Yaremchuk.
Hello, I'm Sergey Rebro.
And you're listening to Ukraine Plus Football.
European transfer window has closed. We are into the first international break of the new season. Teams have played three or four games minimum and are well and truly getting into the 24-25 groove. We, of course, are back to discuss all the interesting happenings of the past few weeks and even more exciting things in this upcoming period. New UEFA competition formats, surprise league leaders, a new chapter for the national team. All of that and more to come up in the latest episode of Ukraine Plus Football. For this episode, we welcome back Dmytro Zhulai, a true friend of the pod, and maybe for the first time in a long while, be able to discuss Dynamo in a positive light following their start to the new campaign. How are you, Dmytro? It's great to see you again.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, as fine as I can be after what happened in the European competitions, because, well, look, you didn't take your chances, you concede goals, well, you play in Europa League. But, well, so far, three league games and no points dropped, even though we played a team, LNZ, that was one of the teams that actually took points off Dynamo last season. So, nine out of nine. Especially considering that Shakhtar already lost two games. You just don't know what's happening.
It has certainly been a big, bizarre start to the season, without a shadow of a doubt. The UEFA competitions, what a great place to get started with this episode. Kicking off even before the season began in earnest. Kryvbass Plisia and the former ghost representative of Dnipro all barred out with zero coefficient points contributed in their six games. Presently, before the league formats begin, Ukraine stands 20th place with coefficient points in desperate need. Now, Shakhtar and Dynamo have reached their respective league stages of the competition, Shakhtar having qualified automatically. Dynamo, was it a valiant effort against RB Salzburg? Could we have expected some more?
Oh, of course it was, if you compare it to what we've had previous season and the season before that. It was a bloody zombie team. People walking around not knowing what to do. And at least here you had some urgency, some desire. But of course you also had those silly, stupid mistakes, especially in the first leg. And generally these are the same people committing those mistakes. So it doesn't look like it's going to improve for them. But as a team, yeah, they had chances. They could have scored in the first leg. And it would have been different had they scored in that game. But of course, then it's really complicated against such an opponent. 2-0 down and you can see it again. And you just can't score three or four easily without conceding as well. Playing that team. So, in general, yeah, it was a good effort because when the draw is made, especially after those previous experiences, you're fearing for the worst, even against the first opponent. And then, of course, the second opponent was very special for me personally. So it was good to see them winning at Hampden of all the places. It's interesting that it had to be there, right? But watching that game on telly, I also enjoyed the great punditry from former Rangers players. It was class, you know. Referee, I didn't see that referee. It was like they blamed everything on referee, you know. Oh, we're doing that as well, you know. When we're losing games, but it was especially fun when it's Well, it's not even in your favor because, well, I don't know, the sending off, okay, the guy decided to do it. It's like Declan Rice being sent off Arsenal against Brighton. I mean, technically, it is a second yellow. You can complain about it, of course. But now, when you've got eight games, no, that's the fun part of it because you've got two games in January. And I just don't really understand how we can approach it. So we're playing away against Galatasaray and then against Erefshah. And that was, I think, yeah, it's the last game, but it's still January. Just like, I don't really know what the plans are and how you can actually do it because you're playing in December against Real Sociedad, your last game. Or the calendar year, I think. And then you have to prepare for two games. And what that, I just, if you don't go through, so of course it's desirable to go through, but we'll see how it goes. At least, yeah, there is some, not even, I'd say, optimism. It's like you are feeling again during the games. You know, just sitting there, numb, watching it, and just knowing what's going to happen. You're feeling again. So, well, it's a kind of a progress, I'd say.
A lot of our listeners who support Dinamo will probably think the same. And I mean, even watching Dinamo myself, who can see that change in Dinamo since, I think even ever since Lucescu left, to be honest. They improved a bit under Sasha, and you can see that there seems to be a purpose in their play at a bare minimum. It's not just aimless passing. There are some all right passing combinations, even when they're playing on the counter, for example, but they seem to know what they're doing and they don't drop their heads. And like you said, Dimitrov, they needed a few too many goals in that second leg against RB Salzburg, but still they went for it in that
Yeah.
second half. They didn't convert anything, which is, I think, a problem for Ukrainian teams as a whole, in European competitions, in the Euros, etc. But that's something that under Lucescu, the game would have been done after that first goal for certain, in terms of there would be no desire to run for it. There'd be no desire to try and create something again, etc., etc. Of course, I think there might be a few teething issues in terms of like Yarmolenko starting so many games, especially in the European ones, where it's evident that his body just can't do it anymore at that level, where it just seems that for whatever reason, he'd be a bit more effective for the final 20 minutes or something to, you know, try and spark something into life. We'll see if maybe Shevkovsky will change anything in the coming months. But like you said, I think he's added, I don't know, they look a lot more organized, even though there are problems at the back, 100%. I think you'll never get that out, iron that out of Denis Popov. There's always going to be some kind of just rash lack of concentration or something like that. Mahavkor looks good, but he is obviously still very young, inexperienced, nowhere near as assured, I would say, as a Zabanni at his same age. I think so. I think we'll get there maybe in a few years' time, but for the time being, it's good that he's starting at the very least, because the other options that are available to Shevkovsky, I think, are very problematic. Bilovar and anyone else. I think for the time being, Dinamo look to be in a good place to be entering this Europa League group stage. And I think something that we probably all of us agree on is that the Europa League, I think, for this season and the stage that they are in, Dinamo is a lot better of a competition to be in than the Champions League, because I think the draw they potentially could have got, I think people were looking, it might not have been that bad if you substituted where they would have been for Salzburg or something like that. But regardless, I think it would have been a lot tougher, and it would have been similar stuff to what we saw against Salzburg, maybe the odd draw, but they would have been out of their depth, especially at this moment in time. But, you know, like you say, Dimitrov, we'll touch a bit on Dinamo's form in the league a bit later, but looks to be very, very positive from a Dinamo perspective going into this autumn period.
I mean, whilst we're talking about Dinamo, When we look at their opponents in the league stage, looking at them here, the double Rome whammy of Lazio and Roma there, Hoffenheim's Sociedad, Galatasaray. It's a tough looking schedule, would you say? What would be the hope when we look at it? What's the realistic hope for you, Dimitro, when you look at the schedule? Where do you see Dinamo picking up the points, and what would be a realistic expectation for them as they approach this new European season?
Well, you'd have to start with Ferencváros and the Latvian side. As for Plzeň, I think they can be a very complicated opponent, no matter where you play them. It's an interesting team to play against. But of course, you'd be hoping to get something in that game. So we're looking at those three. And then it seems like it's going to be whatever you can get from any other four games. Especially considering, yeah, that you go to Istanbul in January. And it's not uncharted territory, of course, because we can go deep into history and just find some games that Dinamo had to play in the 60s, for example, very early in the season, not even in Kyiv sometimes. But, well, it is new for this team. And as for Roma, Lazio, Hoffenheim, yeah, it's just. You hope that it can help them as well, playing against those sides to raise their level and with a certain degree of discipline and organization, try to get something out of the game. But of course, now we're looking at numbers and thinking how many points would you need to get through? Now I'd say we'd have to look at around 12. Maybe less, but again, because what is interesting, it's a new format. We don't have any precedents. We don't know what's going to happen because apparently, even with eight games, it's not good to draw games. It might be better to win four and lose four than win two and draw six, let's say. You just don't know. You need to see how it goes in every competition, Champions League and Europa League, Conference League, they have less games. It's slightly different. But yeah, you'd be looking, of course, to try to get those nine against three sides that seem to be weaker, even that whenever we try to pick a weak side for the clubs, for the national team, it's never that good. And then, yeah, and then to see what you can do against Italians and Real Sociedad, especially away, I don't know, in San Sebastian in December. What? Maybe.
And well, I think Dinamo in that particular game, they're going to have the added, let's say, motivation of playing against potentially a Russian player in that respect. So maybe they'll use that motivation they used against Partizan to get them over the line in Spain. I just want to also add that I think Dinamo's home arena is going to be in Hamburg this season, compared to obviously be playing in Poland, the qualifying stages where not that many fans attended, let's be honest. And then in, I think, just so 22-23 season when they last played in the group stages of a European competition. They played in Krakow at Cracovia Stadium, and that was also less than half full-ish for those matches. So let's see if this German tactic that obviously Shakhtar have employed works to attract more people. But obviously, as of recording this, the venue has not been 100% confirmed officially. Tickets haven't gone on sale, etc., in the way that Shakhtar have been marketing it for at least past 2 months now, for people to go to their stadium in Gelsenkirchen. So that might also be a problem, especially if it's at the Volkspark Stadion, which is like 50k plus seat a stadium. I don't see Dinamo attracting that many people, especially when their home games are Lazio, Ferencváros, RFS, and I think Pilsen. So it could be particularly tough. If they went to Sankt Pauli, for example, though, maybe that might be, the Milanata, that might be a bit more suitable from a capacity perspective. But for some reason, that's not been mentioned at all. So I think it is the main one. But yeah, let's see how they do.
Well, just on Twitter, the well-respected football rankings feed there. They after the league stage was made, they got the computers out and totted up all the data, and it seems that 10 points seems to be the go-to to make the playoff stage, according to them. Dinamo predicted to come in 28th. Out of the 36, but it's so close. A whole group of teams where 9 points is the expected pickup, with maybe one other point from a draw, as we kind of alluded to there. But a couple of draws, that fourth victory, I think would see them comfortably into February football, because it's no longer it's football all year round, and that. I have to be honest, I hadn't considered the long winter break and the implications of that for Dinamo and Shakhtar playing the games in January, which I have to say is quite ridiculous almost. There's these two games to prepare for, and they're not going to get a break. I mean, that's quite simple, simply put. Andrew, when you look at Shakhtar's draw, are you more scared for them?
I think on paper, yes. And especially with the start that they've had to the season so far in the UPL, you probably are going to be concerned by it. Bologna did really well in Serie A last year, lost a few key players, understandably, but still, it's a Serie A team. It's going to be difficult. Atalanta in there as well, won the Europa League. Right, Arsenal. I think that says it all. That's going to be at the Emirates as well, so even tougher per se. Bayern Munich at home at in Gelsenkirchen. That's obviously going to be extremely difficult. I think the last few times that Shakhtar played Bayern in the 2010s ended in absolute drubbings. And on paper, Shakhtar's team is considerably weaker now than it was back then as well. So I think it's going to be, and then they all end it. They end the whole campaign, as we mentioned, in January against Borussia Dortmund at the Signal Iduna Park, which I can't wait for as a ground to sort of see on a Champions League night. But with that sort of being the last match, and with the current scenario where it's not just, oh, we're comfortable in third place or whatever anymore, and we're going to drop down into Europa League, which Shakhtar has kind of done over the past few years. Now it's going to be even more interesting to see with this first ever non-winter break format. How are Shakhtar going to prepare for that? There are obviously a couple friendlies. How much of a break are they going to have? Maybe, Christmas. Maybe not even get to New Year or have New Year and then go straight to training. How is it all going to work? We have no idea. It's going to be an experience for both of these sides and how they're going to cope. But potentially, the fact that they will have these games in January, for example, if they make it into the February stage, it might help them because it's always the problem that, oh, we've just come back off 2 months off. We're not full up to speed against the other teams that have been playing all winter. So potentially it could have the opposite effect. Fingers crossed. That's from a very positive perspective. But I mean, it's going to be tough for Shakhtar. I see them picking up maybe a win or two just on the basis of them, being very organized and somehow, with some of their players wanting to get in the shop window and all that kind of thing, putting in some preparation. But even then, Young Boys, PSV, and Brest, those are the three weaker sides in the group, but still extremely tough. And I don't even want to predict what they'd get. From a positive perspective, I'd say like 6 to 9, hopefully, but I think it's going to be extremely difficult for Shakhtar this season in particular. But let's see how it goes.
It's interesting there that you mentioned they faced Dortmund in the last game, where Dortmund could be firmly entrenched in the top eight or the 8 to 20, whatever it is, position. Who knows? It's going to be tough. And as we mentioned earlier, coefficient points are at a premium, and everyone will be greatly received after the appreciated contribution from Blissier and Krivas last month. Now we're into 4 games into the UPL season, and I don't think anyone anywhere would have expected Alexandria to be top of the pile. 100% record. And of course, that crazy 4-3 victory against Shakhtar just a few weeks ago. What is going on there? Some more miracles down in beautiful Alexandria. Dimitro,
I call it a miracle.
I wouldn't have expected it
No, I mean it's one thing what
at
you
all.
it's one thing what you I expect, and it's another thing when you've got team working together for a while with the same manager. It's not like he's to join them. And yeah, that was a great win for them against Shakhtar, but it's a long season. We'll see how it goes. But what I want to say is it's really good for the league to have that kind of start from such a side, and a manager who looks like he's got to prove himself every single day more than any other manager in the last few years. So yeah, it is interesting. It is interesting, and it's quite exciting because you'd really want that. You want competition because people are talking about the competition we had like 12 years ago, around that period of time, right? But well, it's not going to happen now because the sources of that competition, were, some of them are not available anymore. So it's going to be different. It has to be different. It has to be development of the club or development of the players, growth of the manager. So it's really interesting to see, because in a way it applies to Dynamo as well, because they've got a new manager and they've got a lot of young players in their squad. And even for Shakhtar, look, it's interesting because Pusic joined them and they had a decent campaign. But also considering all the circumstances, do you think he would have been appointed even 5, 6 years ago in Shakhtar? Would he have had a chance? I don't think so. They wouldn't have even noticed him probably, because they had Fonseca, who was Milan manager now. They had De Zerbi, who then went on and worked in Brighton and did well in his first season. So for him, it's also a challenge as well, especially now with this new format of the Champions League and all those games that we mentioned and all those opponents they will have in this tournament. So it's really interesting to see how all those managers in different teams are overcoming those challenges. And it includes Palisse as well, who are so far they're second in the league, also beating Shakhtar.
Yeah, now adding on to that, Nazarenko from Polisia, top of the goal scoring charts, 5 goals inside of those opening few matches. Hutsuliak looking not too bad either. So it seems to be working under Imadashor at the moment. I mean, yes, they beat Shakhtar in quite an impressively organized game where they shut them out. Yes, Volonets played out of his skin with a number of key saves. But it just seems like, I wouldn't call it a hangover, but Shakhtar just don't seem anywhere near their best yet. Hence why they're sort of mid-table-ish. We'll have to wait and see how they do after the international break, and especially with sort of this the games coming thick and fast now with the Champions League too. I think it could be quite a challenging campaign. But like we said, this is where Pusic is going to make his his money and also his reputation. I think it was easy enough, coming off the back of, I guess, sort of the Patrick Van Leeuwen sports conditioning of last season, where the whole team was very fit, but they couldn't string passes together or play particularly well because of his, I guess, more authoritarian coaching style, which I don't think works particularly well with Shakhtar squad, where there are quite a lot of stars and all that kind of thing. As what Dimitrov just said there, I don't think they would have appointed the likes of a Van Leeuwen either 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe not even Jovicevic. But in my opinion, Jovicevic probably suited the team the best over these past 3 years just because of the kind of character he has. And sometimes those that character and just those vibes, even when you're not playing particularly well, carry the team. But now Pušić, he seems to be, I think the right fit for the team at the moment. Let's see how they continue going forward. And like I mentioned, that game against Kiribati abandoned after the 50th minute. It might get replayed at some point in the future. Not replayed, finished. The final 40 minutes. We'll have to wait and see in the future. But someone we haven't spoken about yet, Rukh, who are currently third in the table. And they're playing really well. And we've spoken about them for the past few years. Obviously, they fell just short of the European spots last year. It looks like this season that the potential in the team that has been sort of brewing over the past few years, the youth that has been sort of exuding, has finally matured to the extent that they've got a couple of seasons under their belt now in senior football. And they're playing with that assuredness. They just look really fun to watch. I mean, Hollod, really good at the back. Slubik's not playing at the moment, but he's deputising really well and sort of come into his own so far. Fedor played pretty well at the Olympics and has been impressing at the Maurice Ravello tournament as well. He looks like to be a quite an exciting prospect for the future, at least for Zbirna next year, maybe year after. Karabin and Kvasnica are playing really well. Kvasnica sort of picking up where he left off from last season.
We can have a list. We can have a look at the list on the UPL website. The question is, are they having a good coach? Is the coach good enough for these guys who matured?
I think that Ponomarev has been obviously with the majority of this squad for throughout their development from youth to this senior team. And for whatever reason, just even the way that Rukh's transfer politics go, they don't bring in many people from abroad. They use the majority of their academy. They've brought in Krasnopir, of course, who's been phenomenal. Since arriving, as Ray predicted, and looks to be on course for double figures at a bare minimum if he stays fit this season, from a centre forward perspective. And he, I think, has been what they've been missing. We spoke about this in the last episode, I think, previewing the season. And so far, it's running true. Krasnopir is offering those goals, and he's a natural born goal scorer. And it looks like they are good value to continue in the way that they've started. I think they'll be in and around challenging for the top four spots this season for certain, if what we're seeing so far is able to continue. And I think that Ponomarev, he's been given the faith from Kozlovsky, and so far, give him his dues. They're not too badly at all. And like we said, a lot of their team featuring in the under 21s, some of the younger age groups as well. I mean, the future looks Baruch, to say the
I wish
least.
we could see one of those teams we mentioned, Police Alexandria Rukh, as a winter champion. Because remember when if we had an Apertura and Clausura like they have in the Americas, in South America, they have that would be like winter champions. And I remember once, I might be wrong, Volyn in 2004 was either a new year, 2004, it was either the second or the first after winter. And of course, in the end, they finished like 10th. So I didn't find any intel, any data on winter champions of Ukrainian leagues since independence. And that's a really unfortunate. I wish I could dig further, but we should do something like that, Like all these teams, they deserve recognition and they deserve to be known as the fact that the league just, drops its magic after the as soon as the spring comes.
Yeah, you got a point there, right? But maybe some people would be saying that's a bit too woke, from a perspective. But regardless, I think that we'll have to wait and see, especially with Dinamo and Shakhtar in Europe. I think one thing that's going to be guaranteed is a lot of games, or well, their games, are going to be postponed, moved to either midweeks or next year or something like that. So I think there's good value in seeing neither of those two top at the winter break for sure. And, maybe it might be Alexandria with 100% record all the way up until then, with Rotten Ball,
Like now,
Rotten
sorry,
getting his
Andrew,
dues.
I have to catch you on this Rotten Ball term because first, I wish somebody explained it to me, and secondly, he dropped it this season. He doesn't have this possession as he used to, as it should be in Rotten style. I think that's the official term.
No,
And
of course, it's a
secondly.
lot more pragmatic, as you said. But I think the thing that we, the phenomena of Alexandre this season, Dumitru mentioned that yes, Rotan is a very good coach. Rotan wasn't actually in any of preseason because he was at the Olympics. So that makes it even more impressive that they've had this start. This is how it's going. Then, who knows what can be achieved. But as we mentioned, Dinamo been playing pretty well, getting over the line against, let's say, difficult-ish opponents. LNZ the past weekend beat Karpaty. They're doing what's needed, and it's not like even depressing football, but they're showing that they've got a bit of that what you need to be champions about them early doors, right? Shakhtar struggling, of course, two losses. I don't know what it's down to, though. That's the thing. And I think we will probably understand it a bit more once the Champions League gets underway and we see whether they'll be torn apart or whether they're all maybe conserving energy or something, maybe trying to find out something. Maybe the motivation will pick up in some of these players. But Ray, you're just below all of that. We've got LNZ, we've got Zorya doing particularly well. What's your take on those two starts to their campaigns?
I might be remembering in a wrong way, but I think the guy from Barcelona is in charge of Valencia these days, a former Barcelona Academy guy or something. It's not the only reason they are progressing this season. I predicted that. I put them in the top five. I think we discussed that before. And Zorya belongs in 16th position, of course. Shout out to Mladen Bartolovic. He's done his best. But the club itself is a nonsense club as it is now. The club, not the team itself, and of course not the people who support it. But it's a one-man team. And since you mentioned that, I just realized that all teams in UPL belong to one person, and that person often replaces the fans, the marketing, the transfer politics. And I really struggle to remember who would actually prove me wrong in that matter. Because since Oberland lost its last game in Zorya and what we saw in the broadcast, the performance, the solo of president of Oberland, Alexander Slobodan, I realized that the last team I believed is non-oligarch in UPL is gone. And it was low-key oligarch all along. So it's a bit of disappointment.
Slight bit of, let's say, disheartenment from Ray at the start of this campaign, especially from Oberlin in crisis down at the bottom. Like you say, Slobodan shouting from the touchline was something that we've not seen for a number of years in the UPL. And yeah, it doesn't look particularly great for them. Doesn't look particularly great for Kolos so far, despite the amount of money they've spent and the kind of players that they've brought in. Pozdeev doesn't seem to be the right decision at all. We spoke about this the end of last season when they kept on losing and sort of playing very uninspiring football. How long is Zasuha going to keep up with Pozdeev and maybe go for someone outside of the Kolos system? I think that would probably be the only solution here.
Call a system. Call a system. You heard it here first.
Trondomoritz down there as well. I mean, that's sort of turning into a bit of a Mariupol vibe with lots of Shakhtar loanees, disappointingly, and then sprinkled with some old school players such as Hoblenko, who's returned for like his third spell at the club. Got a good kit though, to say the least. One of the most impressive ones. Obviously announced 4 games into the season, because who needs marketing or anything like that when it comes to one of the bigger traditional clubs in Ukraine, in inverted commas nowadays. I think I want to give a big shout out to Livy Berec. Obviously came up very late. We spoke about them coming through the playoffs, and they've got 2 back-to-back wins, finally, against Veres and Chornomorets. And so far, they look good value to stay up. Fingers crossed that that does continue. I'm impressed. They certainly look more promising in what they want to offer and show, not just as a club, but as an actual team on the pitch, than those 3 teams that we just mentioned, and also in Hulets, who under Cobin, I think, are showing that they're probably nailed on for relegation.
We're at the first international window. It only seems 5 minutes ago we were talking about all the summer tournaments, and Andrew had got back from the Olympics and had finished his journeys all over Europe. And here we are with the new Nations League right upon us. What's the state of play at the moment, Andrew? I know Rebrov and Melosa had the press conference a few weeks ago. Was there anything out of that? And where are we as we go into this break?
Well, I think the press conference was meant to be sort of a roundup of what happened at the Euros, at the under 19 Euros, under 17 Euros, under 23 tournament, aka the Olympics. What did we get out of it? Quite an annoyed Rebrov, sort of relatively, let's say, sharp-tongued against criticism from different journalists and all that kind of thing. But he was very open, I would say, in his responses, which, you know, is a good thing, might not be, don't know. But I think the general consensus from that press conference was that he thinks that the Romania result, which was obviously a massive catastrophe, should be a massive wake-up call to his team. And he hopes they the fact that it was so embarrassing, and the what he saw after that, a repeat of a Romania result will never happen again. And Andriy Shevchenko has come out and said that the main goal of the next 2-year period is to qualify for the World Cup in the USA, Canada, and Mexico by any means necessary, aka via this Nations League playoffs, which potentially could come if obviously Ukraine finish high enough and then don't qualify automatically through the qualifying period, which starts next year. So he's got this 2-year period. Let's see what happens. But from the squad announcement, there's not much different from the Euro squad, realistically. Only one new face completely, one brand new call up, and that's Vladislav Kabayev, who has impressed for Dynamo Kyiv. However, I still don't think he is the solution to anything, because as great of a player as he is in terms of dribbling, sprinting, on that left wing, his realization in terms of final ball, final pass is still lacking, unfortunately. So I don't think he's going to be anything revolutionary. And I still think that Mudrik will probably start ahead of him, if not in one of the games, both of them, against both Georgia and Czechia that we've got coming up this week and next. You've also got Stepanenko, Sidorchuk, and Yarmolenko all called up again. And I think the biggest question is, what is Sidorchuk doing there when he's hardly played for Westerlo this season, who are incidentally like near the top of the table in Belgium? Stepanenko has been bit part for Shakhtar at the start of this season. Did score against Kiribati in an abandoned match. But I mean, I don't think that's going to be causing much because you still expect in that position Brashko to start. And I think he will be the stalwart now going forward. And then Yarmolenko, realistically, he's not going to be starting either game, or he shouldn't be anyway, because Tsiankov's playing really well. And he's fit now, luckily. So the question is, what are they getting called up for? Like backup, is there not any other suitable players to be experimenting with? Is the Nations League this serious of a competition, obviously, because of that fullback playoff potential in a year and a half's time, a year's time, whatever, that it's so essential to get the results in this that, you can't be calling up anyone too new. However, I think the main thing is that when you consider the Nations League, some people, don't take it too seriously, others do. I think the main thing that we need to consider is that the under-21 qualifying campaign is still not finished yet. They've got two matches in September and then two matches in October. And if they qualify automatically, for example, they won't have any playoffs in November entirely. So what I'm expecting is if somehow, or if they do continue in the light that they have the under-21s under Milgosa, 100% record so far, they still got Serbia to play twice, home and away, and England to play away in Bournemouth next month. And if they finish the group top and there is that free November, then potentially we might see these under-21 players that we want to see in the squad then in the final two games against Georgia and Albania away. But I think that will obviously, time will tell. Maybe some of these other players might impress even more. For example, we mentioned earlier when we were talking about Ruch, Krasnopir, Kvasnica getting some calls up, call ups in the from Ruch getting upgraded to the under-21 side. Because from my opinion, Kvasnica is a much better, more dynamic winger, a more one that provides more results and goal contributions than Kabayev. On either wing is much more suitable to be brought in than Kabaya, for example. But hey ho, we'll see how he does if he does come on. And I think the main question, realistically, from a starting lineup squad perspective, is should Pihljonok start? And if he does start, how is he going to be fit in? What do you think, Dimitrov?
Well, I'd start him, definitely. But look, it is a process, as we're told, right? And this press conference that you've mentioned, it was very entertaining. Some of the things that were said, especially about the behavior of some of the players after the Romania game, I swear to God, if I knew who these players were, I wouldn't want them ever in the national team. Ever. Not just for one game or two or three, because it is a serious problem, psychological problem. And unfortunately, in our football, they're training legs, not training heads and minds. And it applies to the clubs and the national team as well. Because when you mention Popov and say, oh, maybe he's always going to do that. Why? Why is he doing that? Because no one's working with him on that. That's the thing. It was the same with Harmos for years. Oh, but he's like that. What did you do to help him, to make him better? So, of course, you need to give a chance to all those players like Bihalonuk to be a leader of the side. Because no, for me, Nations League is a serious tournament. It was a Nations League that kickstarted Shevchenko's national team because they were absolutely terrible in the World Cup qualifiers. And then it was a difficult win against Czechia in the first game. And then it is Slovakia. They played better and better. And then we had this qualifying campaign for the European Championship when we were first in the group. So, yeah, you do need that competition because it is a competition. It is a proper tournament. It's not just glorified friendly games. And you do need to try those people. But within a structure, because I don't know when you ask why Sidorchuk is there when you're Molenko and Stepanenko, they will maybe because they will have to talk again to those who are watching their phones after the game and reading whom are fans blaming for a defeat. I don't know. It's just like it's just a totally different mindset. And if it persists, I mean, we're gonna have more Mania games then. Absolutely. It's just like when you say, oh no, it's not gonna happen again. But why? Well, why do you think it's not gonna happen again? What did you do for it not to happen again? So of course when they start this Nations League campaign, we can watch the games, we can then talk about players who we want to see and who we want to be in which position. But first of all, I would like to see and understand this general idea of what we're going to do. Because when I was watching the Olympic team, yeah, they didn't make it out of the group, right? But I understood what the manager wanted. And it was the same manager who was criticized for not being a coach at all. The same manager who's got 4 out of 4 now with his club and in the league. And I saw a team with a manager, with an idea, with a coach. And of course, yeah, it was the game against Iraq. It was just absolutely terrible. But then you have Morocco, who pretty strong. You have Argentina in the last game, and you're still trying to do. But it was probably the only team that had that idea and tried to play until the end, sticking to that idea. Because this summer, in general, I don't know, we were sold this beautiful concept that 4 points is a historical achievement and that we should be praising the team for getting all those 4 points at the same time that we lost in their group. They didn't even try to get 6 points and go through. So it was a failure for under 17s, for the national team, and only under 19s, like kind of saved the Federation. I don't even know themselves probably by qualifying for the World Cup, and it's hugely deserved. And Mikhailenko did a great job there, and I hope he stays because I've already heard some doubts from him. Like I understand, he may not even want to stay for the World Cup. I do hope he will stay. And the Olympic team, they were abandoned long before the tournament. Look, I was told back in February or March, no one's caring about them. No one's going to do anything about to help them. So, and then you just expect them to go and beat everyone in that tournament. Look, I understand we are in a very different situation to Uzbekistan, but they created a team called Olympic. And all the players from the National Olympic side were playing actually in the league structure. They started in the second division. They went up. They were ninth and sixth in the first division, all the under 23 players. And during those 2 seasons, when they're in the top flight, some players were already taken into bigger clubs in Uzbekistan. Of course, they only got 1 point because, yeah, they had Spain. They won the tournament. They had Egypt, who were semi-finalists, and they drew, I think, with Dominican Republic. But that's just an example of how they treated the tournament. Something that we did not do. We didn't give a shit about that tournament, about that team, about that particular manager. And nobody gave a shit about giving him players. So then I can't even say what about what they did, even though it was, yeah, it was a defeat against Iraq. You can't explain it, but still, well, they lost it. But under 17s, the national team with their historical achievement of 4 points, it's just like I couldn't believe that we were being told all this. That we actually should be grateful for the defeat against Romania, for a draw against Belgium. It's just like, but then it just shows that if these people don't understand it, then how are they going to make it better?
I just want to pick up on something because, well, Andrew, you mentioned beforehand about the under 21 players being kept for the qualifiers this year. This may just be my British mentality coming through here, but it felt during the summer from an outsider that Ukraine. The Federation had spread itself too thin, and they were trying to have the best players for each of the teams, and all the squads lacked a certain depth. Now, for me, the national team, the senior national team, is first and foremost in everything. And I was going to ask you, Dimitra, who you thought the joker was for the changing room out of Stepanenko, Sidorchuk, and Yarmolenko. But I think more pressingly is why are they being called up when we've got these under 21s who are ahead of them now in their stage in the stage of their career? And why are we sending them off to these qualifiers for the under 21 tournaments
No,
when
look.
really, their development would be better in the national team.
No, these guys, they gave a lot of years to the national team, and their experience can be very helpful and crucial to integrate those younger players. There must be a plan of how you're going to do it and when you integrate them, and these more experienced players will be there to help, not to do anything else but help. So at least that's what I hope. That's how it should be. But how it's going to be? Because, well, the under 21s are really an exciting side to watch. Because, yeah, we say they won all the games. Yeah, it's great that they won all the games. But the game against England, for example, it was a game against an extremely serious, strong opponent. And they did play so well in the first half. They were excellent when they had to react to what happened in the second half, and they still got the win. And I'm really looking forward to seeing them play in England away, of course, and to play in Serbia and Northern Ireland. It's something that is very, very important for any generation to keep going to those tournaments, to keep qualifying for those tournaments. Not just play the qualifiers, but play the final tournaments. These are important. These are huge for the development of the players. And yeah, we can see it. Like even with Spain, they won how many now titles? Under 17, under 19 European Championship. Not going to talk about the World Cup, just European Championship. They keep winning them. And then the new generation there in the national team, they go and they win the big one. Even though maybe in Spain there were a lot of people who didn't expect that. That it would be so good, it would be so not easy, but I mean naturally, I'd say. And that's the kind of thing that you'd want Ukraine to establish as well, this natural progression of players through the ranks. So under 17s, under 19s, under 21s, national team. And they need a lot of help, of course, along the way. And when they get to the national team, there must be, yeah, that influence from the senior players as well. But I think that's just the nature of the situation we're in, that we always go in to ask those questions. Why are these guys there? Why is he still there? Why is he still there? It's just like something that's been happening for ages now.
If we're just sort of talking in general about the form of the players that have been called up, a lot of them, there are question marks towards the start of this season. So if we start from the sort of UPL base, for example, Shaporenko's played quite well and Sudakov's been here and there. But neither of them have got their big move that was so heavily touted or, been spoken about for ages outside of the UPL to move to those top five leagues. There's been rumors that people are in for Shaporenko in Serie A. Sudakov obviously priced out completely because no one wants to pay 40 million for him after, an indifferent Euros. He wasn't the worst player on the pitch, but he didn't really take the world alight. The last season, He was okay in the Champions League, but he wasn't like unbelievable. So I think he might get that move eventually, maybe next summer, maybe in January or something, if he puts in good shifts in the Champions League that we've spoken about, if he puts in some good performances for the national team for Shakhtar, then he might get it. But I don't think Shakhtar are going to be getting 40 million for him, realistically speaking. And it depends on how long they're going to hold out for that and how long he's going to have to stay as a result of it. And Shaparenko similarly, because I think Dinamo are holding out for 20 plus million, and the kind of teams that have been allegedly showing interest for him can't afford that kind of money for a player who's technically unproven in a big league. We've seen that Shaparenko has these peaks and troughs in his career where he struggles sometimes, where he plays well. He's been playing well recently, but it's sometimes inconsistent. So we'll have to wait and see from that perspective. But hopefully both of them can be key in this window, and obviously in this Nations League campaign in general, and offer maybe something that they didn't during the Euros on the whole. Of course, Shaparenko played really well against Slovakia, mainly in the second half. But you want that just more consistently. I think a big question mark so far is Artem Dovbyk, his move to Roma. Slightly concerning, obviously big money. There's talk about, all the agent influence in that move and all that kind of stuff. Was it the right one for him? It looks like so far that Roma is nowhere near a team that's going to be playing to Artem's strengths compared to a Girona that, had so many attacking opportunities, created so much, had so many sort of combination of passes that they just got the ball into the box whenever. And Dovbyk was able to either to get on the end of it, get his head on it, even link up play. That at the moment under De Rossi, Roma just look quite static. And so far he's not scored. So he's not got any goals in his opening three, four matches. And it kind of reminds me, the Roma team, not gonna lie, it kind of reminds you of Zbirna, where Dovbyk's not been anywhere near as prolific for the national team as he is, as he ever has been for either Girona or even Dnipro One. And what is that down to? I think it's obviously down to obviously the creative outlets creating the chances for him, which is something that he feeds off and then he finishes them. Can that be addressed? Have to wait and see, I guess. It's the same story of what Dimitrov's been talking about this whole time. Are the problems that we've seen so far being addressed, and will they be from obviously Rebrov, from his coaching team going forward? Yaremchuk as well made his move to Olympiakos. So far, one goal, I think, in three matches, and he didn't start in any of them. Came off the bench, scored a tap-in. I guess maybe that's done a bit of good for his confidence. Hopefully he can do that if needed. Mihailo Mudrik, I think, has been the main talking point under Maresca. Here and there. I know that obviously Dimitrov commentates a fair bit on the Premier League, watches a lot of it as well. I've watched all of Mudrik's games so far this season. I've been to a fair few of them in the flesh. He didn't play against Man City, fair enough. I don't think he would have added much to what Chelsea were doing in that game. He played against Servette twice, was pretty here and there. He wasn't terrible in the home leg, but there's a lot of this sort of rash decision making without any thinking and all that kind of thing. Then he started against Wolves, was subbed at half time. Maresca said that obviously Mudrik needs to change. And then, surprisingly, after those two matches, he started again against Servette away. But in that away game against Servette, you could see that Mudrik is starting to take on board the coaching of Maresca, or at least the criticisms that Maresca has been voicing publicly slash offering behind the scenes as well, where he's taking a bit of time. He's not just passing it, spraying the passes, going into full-on sprints and dribbles and all that kind of thing. He's taking his time. He's finding the right outlet, to give it to another player. He won the penalty against Servette as well after some good play. So it looks like it's getting to him. I also was at the game against Crystal Palace, and Mudrik came on for the final 15, 20 minutes, including added time at the end of the game. And he looked really bright. Once again, he played a really nice sort of ball over the top to Jackson. And, you know, for the 1 millionth time, Jackson didn't convert when he probably should have. It looks like there is something in there. And, you know, there's all this talk that Kabayev should be starting ahead of Mudryk for Zbirna in these matches. Personally, I disagree. I think that Mudryk
Of
should be starting
course,
in.
Andrew. Of course, we disagree because Nazarenko is going to start from
Yeah,
Police.
well, when he gets his call up, then maybe, you know, possibly in October or whatever. But I feel that the reality of the situation is that Mudryk seems to be showing very small glimpses of improvement. Maybe it's just temporary, maybe I'm going mental again. But fingers crossed this can be built on, because it looks like Maresca is a sort of a no-nonsense manager. He is this kind of, maybe not arm around the shoulder, but certainly someone who puts across his ideas directly into the players. And hopefully it works well for Mudryk going forward, even if his long-term future isn't at Chelsea, which, you know, with the amount of million players that they've got with Sancho coming in, it might not be. And then finally, I think the player that I think most surprisingly got another call up is Maxim Talavierov, who had quite a disappointing Olympics for Ruslan Rotanin's team. Few rash decisions, mistakes, that kind of thing. Not been playing particularly consistently for LASK. And when he has played, they've been in losses. He's been playing like central defensive midfield in one game. So the question is like, what's his long-term future? Because surely there must be other options, you know, from a centre back perspective. You know, Svatok didn't get called up this time round. Fair enough, on the basis that he's moved to America. Obviously, he's not the long-term future, but he's still probably the third best centre back that Zbigniew could call up right now. And we'll see how that goes carrying on once maybe settled in at Austin and all that kind of thing. Let's see how this international break goes, because like Ray just mentioned there are players knocking on the door. The Ruch guys, Nazarenko's playing pretty well. Hutsuliak might be getting another shout in at some stage in the future after his impressive-ish start to the season. The goalkeeper perspective, I think Trubin 100% is going to be the starter. I don't think we've got any questions about that anymore after speaking about it for, I think, a good 6 months of the year. As we wrap up this pod and just this section as well, Dimitro, Ray, how are Ukraine going to do in this campaign? What's your predictions? Do you think they can win it? Do you think they can win this group?
I just say I want to see the development of the team on the pitch. Results, of course, yep, I'd love them to get results. But first of all, I want to see a more clear idea of what they want to do on the pitch. I have to say that I don't really understand what is so no nonsense about Maresca, but it's for another conversation. Because really, you know, when you say that there are guys who are really knocking on the door. But it looks like that those who are inside, they lost the keys. They don't even have the lock from that side. And they're just sitting there. And looks like they found the list from the previous month or two or three. And they looked at it and that's going to be our list now. Maybe we should add one name. Okay, let's add Kabayev for okay, just so people wouldn't be mad at us. It doesn't look like. There had been a lot of consideration, a lot of thought given to it. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe we'll be all surprised in October. And we'll have all those guys who are doing well in the EPL in the national team as well, or all the other guys from under 21s. But generally, what I want to see again, it's development of the team, the idea. And it doesn't really matter. If it's going to be like we're playing out from the back like Southampton, killing ourselves in every game and conceding three goals in every game, or we're playing it long and we just try. I just want to see that idea. And the players that will be trying to interpret it on the pitch. Sometimes you think it's not that much to ask, but well, for our national team, well, even when the manager had an idea like Fomenko did. It was still criticized. So yeah, let's see those first two games. Let's see how under 21s will play their games, because it's very interesting now when they're in a kind of a driving position, like they're ahead of England, because England, yeah, they have the same number of points, but again, less than England. How will they cope with that pressure? It's also interesting to see. And we have to remember also that in October, we've got the new cycle for under 17s and under 19s. And now we're getting back to the Federation and the work they're supposed to be doing. And I'd like to know what kind of conversations they had after under 17 European Championship, after what happened there, when the team came out on the pitch in the first two games completely unprepared for that particular opponent that we're facing. And it's unacceptable. So in general, I'd say it's not only something I expect from a senior national team, it's Federation as a whole, the whole structure, because we're being told all the time that they're trying to have it. So I want to see the development of that as well.
In conclusion, the bullet points would be how Stepanenko and Yarmolenko handle the team in the dressing room, how Rebrov handles the team, and is the national team of Ukraine is actually an ultimate team that where they just bring on the best players at the moment. That's all going to be answered with the first games in Nations League. And of course, my personal intrigue is that if the spell, if the ghost of Alejandro Petrarca is still looming over the national team or not? How good are we going to be? How better are we going to be than the previous cycle, the previous management that we had? Plenty to look forward to.
I just want to just confirm that Ukraine UAAF have officially signed the deal with Adidas from the kit manufacturing point of view. The Joma deal has finished as of the 1st of September. However, Zbirna will be playing in Joma kits during this September period. Then Ukraine will have brand new spanking Adidas kits in October. So look forward to that.
Well, it certainly promises to be an interesting international break and hopefully 6 points to get the Nations League campaign up and running. But that's it now, listeners, for this episode. We'll be back after the international break, where we're hopefully celebrating some fantastic performances and optimism having returned to the national team after its summer adventures. But till that time, take care, stay safe, and goodbye for now. Goodbye.
Що славна Україна зажурилася.